What do we have here? The Rish Outcast. You can do better. Thank you, Fake Sean.
Now, do you think he meant that I can do better than I have in recent episodes, or that the audience, the listeners, can do better? Well, now I'm worried. If Fake Sean Connery doesn't endorse the show. Of course, he did press for Highlander 2 The Quickening. So, I don't know that his integrity level is super, super high. I am Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast, and this is a weird episode in that I'm presenting somebody else's story. I don't even know how to explain it. What I'm going to be running is a fantasy story called Soul Cleaver Clarence by Matthew Jarvis. This story ran on the Cast of Wonders podcast, which is, it's a YA fantasy podcast in the Escape Artists family network. You know what I'm saying? And they asked me to narrate the story. And they just wanted me to be the narrator. They were going to do a full cast presentation of Soul Cleaver Clarence. And I emailed them and I said, look, I did full cast productions all the time in the past. And usually what I do is I record the whole story and all the parts. And you can just lay that down as a bass track and then splice in all of the dialogue that you've got other people doing in its place. And I don't know if they were just like, are you telling us how to do our job? You know how many listeners we have versus how many listeners you have? But they were nice and they're just like, yeah, just do it, whatever you want. And so what I did was I recorded the whole thing and I did all of the voices as if I were a solo narrator, as if it were an audiobook that I was doing professionally. And you may ask, well, why did you do that? And I don't have an answer for you, except for that it's no more work for me to do a bunch of voices than to just do, you know, a boring read in my own voice. In fact, it's probably better for me to do that because it's practice and it sharpens my skills. And eventually, I'll come up with new voices that I can do that I realize, oh, hey, I like this voice. I'm going to do this character like that. Again, I don't know how you could just do the narration, because the narration alone is, she said angrily. Tom muttered under his breath. She said. He asked. She responded. He whispered into the phone. Maybe you can do it like that, but it just seems like it's way more work for whoever's editing it, and then also it's just, the performance is not going to be as good. It's going to be dead in a way. You know, that's just my opinion, but it's also true. And so I did the entire reading and sent it to them, and it turned out good that I had done that, because they used my performance for the narration and for the main character of Soul Cleaver Clarence. And I don't know if they had somebody set up to do that narration and that person dropped out or what, but it surprised me to hear my performance in there. And there were a couple of minor characters that they left my lines in as well. But I didn't know that that was going to be the case. When I first sent them the recording, I thought, well, it seems like an awful lot of work and probably a pretty good performance that's going to waste. I'm going to email Matthew Jarvis and I'm going to ask him if I can run my solo read on The Rish Outcast? And he said, yes. So I'm going to go ahead and run that, and then I'm going to talk about why I ultimately regretted doing that, and you can decide whether that was right or that was wrong, and we can talk about, well, whatever jumps into my head.
Okay, and so now, without any further ado, Rish, I present to you Matthew Jarvis's soul.
Rish, you pathetic podcaster with a particularly puny penis.
Wait, what? Oh, now you pay attention. Fake Sean, don't interrupt the show, okay, man? You're just here to read the Creative Commons and not well.
Ah, Rish, how long have you been podcasting?
Me? I don't know, this is my third show.
You have to do a bio of the author.
I do?
Let me do it. When he grows up, Matthew J. Jarvis would like to be a swashbuckling adventurer from misty lands unknown. For now, he will settle for being an architect and writer of speculative fiction from Victoria, B.C., Canada.
Okay, thank you.
Joel Cleaver Clarence was originally published at Cast of Wonders as Matthew's first professional sale.
Thank you, Fake Sean. That was...
When asked his thoughts for narration of the story, Matthew recommended Rish Outfield for his amazing ability to narrate a host of unique character voices.
Present company excluded. Thank you.
Say hello at MatthewJJarvis.com. Well, why are you sitting there resting when we're so close to the end?
Well, I wasn't sure if you were done or not.
Insert unsettling comment about Rish's mother.
Hey, can I read the story, please?
Yes, of course. Why are you wasting more time?
Thank you.
So, enjoy Soul Cleaver Clarence, and I will meet you on the other side.
Soul Cleaver Clarence by Matthew J. Jarvis. Narrated by Rish Outfield.
My dear dragon, the princess announced as she held aloft Clarence's topaz windflower, its gemstone petals glinting beautifully in the sun. These are, without doubt, the finest sculptures in all the land.
Around him, the humans attending the fair clapped enthusiastically.
State your name, dragon, and ask any favor in my power to grant, for you have truly won first prize.
Clarence glowed with pride.
My name is Soul Cleaver.
The thunder of his father's roar shattered the late afternoon quiet of the forest, as well as Clarence's reverie. He clutched the real topaz windflower in his claws and frantically cast about for somewhere to hide it.
Where are you, Cleaver? A challenger has ascended from the little human fair.
Panicking, Clarence tucked the sculpted flower beneath his wing just as Rangdor the Terrible's scaly head bobbed into view.
This is it, Cleaver,
Rangdor cried, catching sight of Clarence.
The day you defeat your first knight! Rah! Another one,
Clarence groaned.
No, no. This one is young, perfect for you to sharpen your teeth on.
Rangdor's tail crashed into a nearby tree as he wheeled around.
But what, Cleaver?
Clarence could see the heat of his father's excitement shimmering in waves around his snout. He tried to think of an excuse that would allow him to return to his latest sculpture, but failed. It wasn't as if he'd actually be able to show it at the fair anyways.
Never mind,
Clarence said glumly, tightening his wing to hold the flower in place.
Then come, Cleaver. Victory awaits.
I call you forth, dragon, to face the justice of my sword.
The young knight stood beyond the tree line, her polished armor glinting in the light of the setting sun. Rangdor nodded expectantly towards the knight.
Go on, son.
With a sigh and some unavoidable snapping of branches, Clarence emerged into the mountain clearing and lumbered towards the challenger.
Don't forget the words,
Rangdor called after him. Clarence tried to sound menacing as he bore down on the knight.
And you, human, will feel the wrath of my fire.
He inhaled deeply to wreathe the small knight in flame, but accidentally sucked in a small passing bird. There was a strangled chirp, and he coughed out a plume of smoldering feathers. The knight charged, screaming at Clarence, slashing at his leg. But the angle was wrong, and the sword was knocked, ringing from her grip.
Attack!
Cried Rangdor. Clarence lifted a clawed foot to swipe at her.
Do the roll, Denise,
called a human voice. The young knight dove towards her sword, attempting to roll, but ending up flat on her back. A stream of tinny curses sounded from inside her helmet.
Seriously, Denise?
A human woman stepped out from behind a boulder. Her armor was pitted and scarred, where the young knight's was gleaming and bright.
How many times have we practiced this? The dive and roll is your signature move. It was your signature move, Mother.
The grounded knight tugged off her helmet.
Why can't mine be the reasonable negotiation?
The older woman stepped in front of Clarence and hauled the young knight, armor and all, to her feet.
You are between Soul Cleaver and his prey, human.
Rangdor left the tree line and stomped towards the group. The woman turned.
And you are?
Rangdor the Terrible, scourge of a dozen nations.
Well, I am Beatrice Valorarm, and my daughter Denise Justicebringer will not be beaten. She'll carve that young dragon like a stuffed hen.
Rangdor trumpeted furiously, whacking his tail against the ground.
Soul Cleaver will rain fire upon her before she can even get close.
Then Denise will duck and roll, dodging the flames and slicing his tendons.
The woman named Beatrice mimed the action with an invisible sword.
Soul Cleaver will catch her feeble sword with his mighty razor talons.
Rangdor's tail hit the earth again, causing Clarence and the young knight to retreat to a safe distance, as the argument continued.
Unbelievable,
the girl Denise said, gesturing at their parents. Clarence flicked out his tongue in agreement.
At least this way we don't have to fight.
He tried a toothy smile. Denise looked at him uncertainly.
Your name isn't really Soul Cleaver, is it?
Clarence cringed.
I go by Clarence.
Well, I... Wait. What's that?
Denise creaked to a crouch in her stiff armor and picked something up off the ground.
It's...
she said, carefully brushing dirt from the find.
It's...
With a jolt, Clarence recognized the object as his topaz windflower. It must have slipped from under his wing.
It's not finished yet.
Clarence plucked the flower from her palm and cradled it protectively out of view.
You made that?
Denise's eyes went wide.
How?
Clarence looked anxiously towards his father, but Rangdor was still snout to nose with Denise's mother, arguing vehemently.
If I show you, you can't tell anyone, he said.
Sure.
Sticking the flower back under his wing, Clarence lowered himself to sniff at a few exposed rocks. One in particular held the right tang of iron hidden within its granite shell. He closed his jaws around the rock and blew bone-melting fire until he felt it soften. Swishing the molten rock in his maw, he separated out the pure quartz and spit out the impure slag. He pulled the glowing mass from his mouth, and with razor-sharp talons, etched intricate lines and delicate shapes into the hardening crystal. Satisfied, Clarence submerged the sculpture into a nearby forest pool, resulting in a sharp hiss. He dried it with a warm puff of air and offered the finished product to Denise, an amethyst flowering lily.
"Clarence," Denise breathed, taking the lily. "That's amazing."
She held it up to catch the last rays of sun. Heat rose to Clarence's face.
"It's not much," he said, pawing the ground. "Usually I spend longer on them."
"You have more?"
Denise looked up.
"Clarence, you should bring them to the fair tomorrow."
The daydream of the princess's praise returned, but Clarence flexed his claws into the earth.
"I can't."
"Why not?"
"Why not? Dragons are banned from human fairs by royal decree, and Rangdor will never let me go."
"But what if..."
A low growl sounded from the back of Clarence's throat, for which he immediately felt ashamed.
"I want to go, really, but my father won't understand."
"You haven't told him about your sculptures?" Denise asked.
Terror raised the spines on Clarence's back, and he shook his head side to side. Denise nodded knowingly.
"There are things Beatrice Valorarm doesn't understand either."
She tucked the amethyst lily in her breastplate and out of view.
"Like what?"
Clarence asked.
Nothing, Denise said absently. "Say, do you have a lair close by?"
"What? Oh, yes, in the forest."
"You have a hoard of treasure, I assume?"
Clarence nodded.
"Any captives?" Denise asked.
As Clarence began to answer no, he noticed an unfamiliar silence. Their parents had stopped arguing.
"Denise!"
Beatrice was looking at her daughter in shock.
"Tell me you are not planning a daring rescue."
"Mother,"
Denise's cheeks reddened.
"You're not a grown woman yet, Denise. You know the rules. No rescues until you best the dragon. Is he bested?"
Beatrice gestured at Clarence.
"I think not. Come, Denise. We're leaving."
With an angry cry, Denise kicked at the dirt. Turning to Clarence, she whispered,
"If I could get you into the fair tomorrow, would you go?"
Clarence hesitated, his thoughts again on his father.
"Would you, Clarence?"
"Denise!"
cried Beatrice. With one last look at Clarence, Denise ran, clanking after her mother.
"Rah! A worthy challenger and her insufferable mother! Well fought, Soul Cleaver!"
Rangdor paused.
"Soul Cleaver, where are you?"
Following the two knights at a distance, Clarence broke through the forest clearing and came to crouch on a rise overlooking the darkening valley and fair below. Little torches like fireflies illuminated the cluster of brightly colored tents. Distant human instruments strummed, and delicious smells played on the breeze. Longing twisted in Clarence's stomach.
"You want to go down there, son?"
Rangdor asked, now seated beside Clarence. Clarence looked at his father in amazement.
"We can swoop down there together tomorrow and rain fiery destruction upon them. Rah!"
Wingtips drooping, Clarence sighed.
"No, it's fine."
Rangdor wasn't listening.
"The humans shall rue the day they trespassed on the territory of Soul Cleaver and Rangdor the Terrible."
"I said I don't want to."
Rangdor's scaly eyebrows shot up in surprise, and then curved downward in anger.
"You don't want to go with me? Fine. But you can't attack them on your own. It's too dangerous. I forbid it."
Clarence began to protest, but Rangdor's look darkened. He bit back the words, knowing the matter closed. Suddenly, the bright colors and lights of the fair below made Clarence's head ache. The smells, enticing a moment before, churned his stomach. He turned his back on the valley and started towards their lair, his tail dragging heavily in the dirt behind him. Something hit Clarence's nose.
"Psst!
Hey, Soul Cleaver, wake up!
Blearily opening his eyes, Clarence saw Denise, torchlight flickering off her armor. Her hair was tangled and matted. She threw another rock at him, which bounced off his brow and clattered across the cave floor.
I'm already up!
That's for making your lair so darn hard to find. I've been wandering around the woods for an hour.
She pulled a twig from her hair.
What are you doing here? Clarence hissed. If Rangdor finds you...
A stalactite rattling snore from the next room signaled that his father was still asleep. Clarence breathed a sigh of relief.
I'm going to get you into the fair, Denise said.
What? How?
A thread of hope wove through Clarence's apprehension.
We can disguise you and pretend I made your flower sculptures to avoid suspicion.
Clarence's tail twitched in excitement, but then became still.
Why would you help me?
I'm a knight, Clarence, Denise said proudly. I swore an oath to help those in need, and, well,
she added, looking uncomfortable.
If your sculptures win first prize, I would get the boon from the princess.
Clarence hadn't given the princess's prize much thought.
What are you going to ask for? He said.
Denise's cheeks flushed red in the torchlight.
Do we have a deal or not, Clarence?
Another loud snore made Clarence cringe.
What about Rangdor?
What about him?
He forbade it.
Denise threw up her arms with a squeak of armor plates.
Beatrice forbids something every 5 minutes. We can't let them control us, Clarence. You have to be your own man. Dragon, I mean. Do we have a deal?
She extended a gauntlet to Clarence. Denise was right. Besides, Rangdor usually slept till midday. If Clarence could be back in the lair before noon, Rangdor might not even realize he'd gone.
Deal,
Clarence said. He enclosed Denise's entire hand in his paw. She grinned.
Good. Let's get your flowers and get out of here.
Clarence nodded and shuffled himself over to the far rock wall. He pushed aside a boulder to reveal the nook behind. Denise approached and drew in a sharp breath when she saw his collection. Glittering gemstone flowers of every type and size caught the torch's light. There were azurite shooting stars, ruby foxgloves, a citrine sunflower, and even intertwining vines of bright peridot.
Clarence! Denise said in awe. The princess isn't going to know what hit her.
Together, they carefully loaded the sculptures into a sack and stole into the night.
I can't believe this was your disguise to sneak me into the fair,
Clarence grumbled as the cool, wet paint sloshed against his side.
It's never going to work.
Denise had led Clarence down the mountainside to a forest clearing, where supplies were already waiting to enact her plan.
Of course it will.
Denise plunged the thing she called a mop into the barrel of white paint once more before slopping it up Clarence's side.
You will have to moo, though.
Moo?
Denise pushed her cheeks together and let out a long moo.
You try.
Clarence took a deep breath.
Moo!
Quiet! You trying to wake the whole fair? More bovine, less dragon next time.
Clarence nodded, having no idea what she meant.
Well, that just about does it,
Denise said, stepping back to admire her work.
For the base coat, at least. Now for the spots.
She pried open a new barrel and dunked in a brush.
Close your eyes, she said,
walking around to stand in front of Clarence. Clarence stooped his head so low he was level with Denise and closed his eyes. A moment later, there was a cold tickling sensation across his face.
Why do you become a knight?
He asked, eyes closed.
What?
Well, I have to be a dragon. But don't humans decide what they are going to be?
The brush strokes continued, but Denise was silent.
I mean, you're not very good at fighting. No offense.
You sound like my mother, Denise said. There is more to knighthood than fighting. Knights do good deeds. They uphold a moral code and, well, they get the princess.
Something in Denise's tone made Clarence open his eyes. She didn't meet his gaze.
I thought princes get princesses, he said.
Her eyes flashed.
Thank you, O wise dragon. The prince gets the princess. Fantastic. Do I look like royalty to you?
Denise sighed.
You're either born royalty or you're not, just like dragons. But knights have the next best chance. The knight in shining armor always rescues the princess.
Denise looked down at her own armor, a mirror in the moonlight.
At least that's what happens in the stories.
So when you asked if we had a captive in our lair,
Clarence asked, beginning to understand.
Dragons are meant to have a princess prisoner.
Denise emphasized the words with waves of her brush.
This is standard stuff, Clarence. You let me down.
She plunked herself on a nearby stump, the wood splintering under her armor.
Having Beatrice Valor arm as a mother doesn't help. She says I need to earn the favor of a princess. I need to climb the tower, brave the evil, or defeat the monster, whatever. If I don't, well, then I don't deserve to rescue her.
Have you told your mother why you want a princess?
She looked up at him darkly.
Have you told your father about your flowers?
A shiver ran down Clarence's back that only had a little to do with the drying paint. Denise sighed.
If your sculptures win at the fair today, the boon I will ask for is a kiss. Given I'm a terrible knight, it's probably the only chance I'll get.
I don't think you're a terrible knight. You're the best knight I know,
Clarence said earnestly.
You don't know any other knights, Clarence,
Denise said. But Clarence thought he saw her hiding a smile. The quiet that settled on their clearing was broken by the occasional chirp of morning birds. Through the trees, Clarence saw the eastern sky had turned a sunrise pink.
Well,
Denise said, rising to her feet,
we'd better keep going. The fair starts at sunrise, and you're still only half a cow.
Clarence watched as Denise readied the brush with black paint once more.
A kiss is when humans touch faces,
he asked. Denise looked at him in disbelief.
Yes, Clarence,
she said, resuming painting.
A kiss is when humans touch faces.
The bell Denise had tied around Clarence's neck clacked merrily as he swiveled his head this way and that, taking in the opening fair. Everywhere he looked, humans were preparing for the day. He wanted to explore it all, but Denise had told him to stay put as she spoke to her mother, then found their allotted booth to display his flowers. His painted disguise was working perfectly. He could tell from the way the humans stared openly at him as they walked past.
"Great stars above, that cow is grotesque," exclaimed one man.
"Moo!"
Clarence responded happily, blowing the man's brimmed hat clear across the fair. Denise appeared from the maze of bright tents and took the rope lead around Clarence's neck.
"All set," she whispered. "Beatrice thinks I'm on patrol, guarding against dragons."
She led Clarence through the aisles to their booth, complete with a wood structure and fabric canopy overhead. Together, they arranged the gem sculptures on the table for display. Clarence used his bulk to block the presentation from view, planning to reveal it only when the princess arrived.
"I think it's ready, Clarence,"
Denise said when he repositioned the emerald chrysanthemums for the fifth time. Reluctantly, Clarence stepped back to allow Denise to cover the flowers with a cloth.
"Now we wait for the princess."
Clarence fidgeted anxiously, wings and spines straining against the dry paint on his back. But he soon became distracted by the host of new and intoxicating sights, sounds, and smells of the fair. There were humans performing acrobatics, songs being sung, and savory meats being roasted over hot coals. And so the fair progressed as the day drew on, until a trumpeting of human instruments announced the arrival of the princess. Clarence's trepidation immediately returned in full.
"She's perfect,"
Denise whispered, as the princess came into view, emerging from the crowd of humans surrounding her. Clarence felt nervous heat rolling off his body.
"Fair knight,"
the princess greeted, her blue silk dress and veils waving in the breeze. Denise rushed forward to kneel and kiss the princess's hand. The princess's eyes rose to Clarence.
"Your fair entry?"
she asked apprehensively.
"No, Your Highness."
Denise flushed and motioned for Clarence to move. Heart thudding, Clarence bit the corner of the cloth and pulled it aside to reveal his work. The garden of flowers twinkled and shone. Prismatic rainbows played around the table and the underside of the canopy, cast from the ensemble of delicate sculptures. The crowd held their breath as the princess leaned forward to study the sculptures. After a moment, she straightened.
"Fair knight," she said with a smile, "I judge your craftsmanship to be..."
Her eyes drifted up from Denise towards the sky.
"To be..."
"What?"
Clarence said, forgetting himself.
"To be what?"
"A dragon!"
Clarence whirled, ready to moo at the accuser. Except the man that had cried out wasn't pointing at Clarence. He was pointing to the sky.
"Oh, no,"
Clarence whispered, his own head tilting upwards. The noonday sun shone through Rangdor's red wings as he soared over the fair.
"Soul Cleaver!"
he roared, and banked to land. Chaos erupted. Humans stumbled and ran, trying to gather their loved ones and get clear of the dragon's path.
"Princess!" Denise cried excitedly. "We need to get you to safety!"
The princess didn't move, but stared up at Rangdor in wonder. Rangdor landed and slid to a halt in a shower of dirt and grass.
"Soul Cleaver! There you are! Did the humans capture you? What have they done to your scales?"
"Nothing,"
Clarence said.
"They didn't capture me. They didn't do anything."
"Then why are you here?"
Rangdor said, arching his back.
"I forbade you coming, Cleaver."
I...
Clarence tried desperately to think of something Rangdor would believe. His eyes landed on the figure in blue silk.
"I came to capture the princess?"
"You should have told me, Cleaver. But well done, son. Grab her quick and we'll take her to the lair."
"Not so fast, dragon."
Through the crowd strode Beatrice Valorarm.
"This princess," she said, coming to grab the princess's arm, "is going to be rescued by Denise Justice Bringer."
"She is?"
Denise asked.
"I mean, of course she is. Once she bests your dragon," Beatrice added.
Denise's expression fell.
"Foolish knight, this princess is going to be stolen by Soul Cleaver. He disguised himself so that he could take her and your little knight by surprise. Rah!"
Rangdor reached out and enclosed the princess's other wrist in his claw so that she was pulled between them.
"Oh no,"
the princess said, looking mildly perturbed.
"I have been taken captive again."
"Denise was on to your dragon the entire time," said Beatrice. "She was waiting for him to reveal himself so that she could skewer him on the spot. Why else would she be here instead of on patrol as she was instructed to be?"
Beatrice pulled again, so the princess was jostled between her and Rangdor.
"Help,"
the princess said resignedly.
"Someone please save me."
"Clarence, we have to do something,"
Denise pleaded with him.
"We have to rescue her."
"This is my fault,"
Clarence said.
"You're going to miss your chance with the princess because I couldn't tell my father the truth."
He raised his head and spread his wings so they ripped free from the paint on his back.
"I'll distract Rangdor," he said. "You run in and save the princess."
Clarence faced his father.
I didn't come to steal the princess, he said loudly. Then Cleaver would... What? What did you say, Soul Cleaver?
Rangdor turned his head, still gripping the princess's wrist.
I didn't come to the fair for the princess.
Rangdor's tail whacked against the ground, a dangerous sign at best.
Cleaver, he growled. Maybe you came to kill humans, but... I didn't come to kill humans. I don't want to hurt anyone. I never did. What? What are you saying, Cleaver? You aren't making any sense.
Rangdor's tail thumped harder. Clarence took a deep breath.
I came to show my flowers. Your what?
Clarence, your flowers.
Denise broke into a clunky run, not towards the princess, but past Rangdor towards the display booth. The vibrations from Rangdor's tail had knocked the wood frame canopy off its supports, and the heavy structure was teetering ominously above Clarence's fragile sculptures.
No, Denise!
Clarence shouted, but it was too late. Just as she arrived, the canopy collapsed atop her, knocking her to the ground. Beatrice cried out, but the voice of the princess was louder.
Fair knight,
she yelled, and turning to Rangdor and Beatrice,
unhand me.
When neither complied, the princess gritted her teeth.
So be it.
She moved faster than Clarence's eye could follow, and suddenly Rangdor was clutching his forepaw in pain, and Beatrice was knocked back, struggling to keep her balance. Free of her captors, the princess sprinted, but Rangdor's tail, thrashing in surprise, flew directly towards her. Clarence heard the human onlookers gasp, but the princess leapt high, silks trailing through the air, and executed a beautiful dive over the scaly tail to land in a perfect roll. She reached the booth wreckage and hauled the young knight clear. Denise opened her eyes to see the princess above her.
You saved me,
she said in awe.
Why did you run into danger so quickly, good knight?
The princess asked, helping Denise to her feet.
You were trying to protect my flowers.
Clarence felt a lump in his long throat as he approached with Beatrice. Rangdor hobbled behind.
I'm sorry, Clarence, Denise said. I only managed to get one.
She opened her palm to reveal Clarence's topaz windflower, still polished and perfect. Emotion welled within Clarence. Denise's actions meant more to him than any judgment from the princess. If she believed in him that much, how could he be ashamed? Tenderly, he craned his neck forward, took the flower from her, and placed it in Rangdor's paw.
This is why I came to the fair, Clarence said quietly. Father, Dad, I don't want to kill humans, or best knights. I want to make these.
Rangdor studied the flower in his palm, while smoke trailed uncertainly from his nostrils.
I don't understand, Beatrice said, turning to Denise. You aided the dragon? Why?
After taking a deep breath, Denise met Clarence's eye for a moment before saying,
I wanted to win the prize, the boon from the princess.
She focused on her mother, avoiding the princess's gaze.
What? What could a princess possibly offer that would compare with the glory of besting a...
Denise leaned forward to whisper in Beatrice's ear. Her mother's eyes widened.
Oh,
she said after Denise finished.
Well, then.
Seeming unsure of what to say, Beatrice pulled Denise into a rough hug. Denise's initial look of shock faded, and she returned the embrace heartily. A bold human fairgoer from the surrounding crowd approached as Rangdor examined Clarence's windflower.
You mean to say a dragon made that?
The man asked, reaching to touch the flower.
Careful, human, Rangdor growled. You bear witness to the craft of Soul Cleaver, and your pitiful legs could not carry you fast enough were you to so much as smudge one of his creations. Rah!
The human man fell back in terror and retreated into the crowd. Relief flooded Clarence, and he found himself grinning.
They can touch them, Dad.
You should bring your flowers to the great fair in the capital next month, Dragon, the princess said. If you are able to make more, that is.
She glanced at the collapsed booth. Excitement swelled in Clarence's chest. He bobbed his head eagerly.
I can. I thought dragons were banned from attending your fairs,
Rangdor said, a note of bitterness in his growl. The princess winced.
My father's decree, but I think it is time he saw what dragonkind can offer. And perhaps, she added in a low voice, time he started giving his daughter more responsibility than judging fairs. And you, noble knights,
she spoke loudly once more to Denise and Beatrice,
you should come as well, to,
her eyes lingered on Denise.
Keep the dragons in check.
The princess untied the blue scarf from around her neck and presented it to Denise.
A token, she said. Helping the dragon was truly knightly.
Denise blushed furiously.
But I didn't save you. A welcome change, the princess said with a smile.
There was applause from the human onlookers as Denise knelt and the princess placed the scarf around her neck. The princess leaned in as Denise rose.
Perhaps next time we meet, you shall receive the boon you are looking for.
Denise gawked at her.
Who are you?
Clarence asked, maw agape. The princess straightened, brushing back long brown hair.
To my subjects, I am Felicity Augusta II, but my friends call me Fina.
She winked.
Until we meet again, dragons, good nights.
In a swish of silk, the princess Fina disappeared into the crowd.
That human is acceptable,
Rangdor said begrudgingly.
She marked Denise Justice Bringer with royal favor, Beatrice said, casually fingering the end of the blue fabric.
Rangdor snorted.
Soul Cleaver's sculptures are going to earn hundreds of your special human scarves.
Around them, the humans began packing away the fair, giving the dragons a wide berth.
Well, Denise is destined to be a famed knight, Beatrice said, known for her good deeds and winning the favor and hearts of princesses across the land.
Foolish human! Soul Cleaver shall receive commissions from around the continent. His flowers shall be prized more highly than gold.
Denise and Clarence shared an exasperated look, which turned into a grin. The end.
Okay, so that was Soul Cleaver Clarence, It's Hard to Say, by Matthew Jarvis. I guess we can talk a little bit about him if you want, but first things first. In preparation for doing this episode, I downloaded and listened to the episode of Cast of Wonders, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you want. I record this before I publish it, so I don't know what if you want means. I'll put a link if you'd like to listen to that. But as I said before, or as the invented editor over there said, there's way more listeners to that than in anything I've done. So chances are you've already heard it if you, I don't know. You could be a fan of mine. I mean, you're listening to my show. That gives me comfort. Anyhow, I listened to the Soul Cleaver Clarence full cast production so that I would be familiar with it. And I thought, well, maybe it will give me some things that I would like to talk about in my episode. And a full cast production is very different than a solo read. There are advantages, namely distinctive voices and accents and character's personality. When a female character speaks, it's a female voice, and you don't have to suspend your disbelief. Talent is probably an advantage, but there are also disadvantages, and the chiefest disadvantage is that you're going to have varying levels of quality of audio. Like, you know, some with hiss, some with a good microphone, some without, some maybe super loud, some super quiet, that you have to mix together. But you're also going to get varying levels of quality in the performance. And I'm not going to throw any shade on Cast of Wonders or any of the people that did their voices. One of the voices in the full cast production was awesome, was excellent, was better than I did, I have no doubt. One of them was really bad. But there's also just a sense of community and a sense of a performance, of a play, a film, when you've got all these multiple voices, that's really neat. At the same time, unless you've got all these people together in a room and they're playing off of each other's lines, they're listening to the way the narration is going, they're invested in the story in the way that you would be if you're all in the same room, you're going to have tonal inconsistencies and problems with it. And I noticed that. I noticed that there were times when not everybody was exactly on the same page, and that's because you're not playing off of somebody else. You're just doing your lines. I, as a solo artist, am also able to sort of create characters in the way that I do my performance, in the tone, in the accent, in the, you know, the volume, the speed in which I am telling the story. And a lot of that goes away when it's full cast, because you'll have somebody that's in a hurry. They want to get the lines done, and so they tend to go a little bit faster. And somebody else that's just like, wow, I'm enjoying this, and they go slow. And it's just jarring to hear the two people that are supposed to be talking to one another, and one is talking really, really fast, and the other is just taking their time. I guess I'm trying to give the pros and the cons of a full cast production versus a solo read. But like I said before, I'm not trying to criticize Cast of Wonders. In fact, when I heard the full cast production, I immediately regretted having asked Matthew if I could run his story on this show. Because it's great. Full cast, it used to be my bread and butter. That's what we did with the Doonstief from the beginning, because it was something that Big and I both enjoyed, and we realized that we could do that because there were two hosts instead of just a single host. Everything would be at least somewhat full cast. So I thought, oh shoot, you know, this is fine. This is great. There are all these varied voices. There is the father's booming, snarling voice that is just, well, maybe I will run a few seconds of the full cast production, just so you can hear. Listen to this, to a few seconds of it, and then we can continue to talk, just, you know, for compare and contrast.
Chaos erupted.
Princess!
Denise cried excitedly.
We need to get you to safety!
Rangdor landed and slid to a halt in a shower of dirt and grass.
Soulcleaver, there you are!
Rangdor said, arching his back.
Grab her quick, and we'll take her to the lair.
Not so fast, dragon.
Through the crowd strode Beatrice Valorarm.
This princess,
she said, coming to grab the princess's arm,
is going to be rescued by Denise Justice Bringer.
She is?
Denise asked.
I mean, of course she is.
Once she bests your dragon,
Beatrice added. Denise's expression fell.
Foolish knight, this princess is going to be stolen by Soulcleaver.
Rangdor reached out and enclosed the princess's other wrist in his claw so that she was pulled between them.
Oh, no,
the princess said, looking mildly perturbed.
I have been taken captive. Again.
Denise was on to your dragon the entire time, said Beatrice. She was waiting for him to reveal himself so that she could skewer him on the spot. Why else would she be here, instead of on patrol as she was instructed to be?
Beatrice pulled again, so the princess was jostled between her and Rangdor.
Help,
the princess said resignedly.
Someone, please save me.
Clarence, we have to do something.
Denise pleaded with him.
We have to rescue her.
Okay, so in that little bit, you can hear the strengths and weaknesses of a full cast performance. And you already heard my narration, so you know the strengths and the weaknesses of a solo read. Like I said, I felt like it was selfish of me to want to run my own reading on the show, because I feared that people would say, oh, he's saying that his solo read is better than their full cast performance. And that's maybe valid. But what really decided me is that I got an email from Matthew, and I had told him that I would run the show, I don't know, in October or September or something like that. And September and October had come and gone, and I hadn't run it. And he emailed me and asked, are you still going to do that? I really wanted to hear your solo read. And so that made me say, well, even though I have qualms about the validity, the need the world has for my reading, I'm going to run it because he wants to hear it. And maybe that means that some other people would enjoy hearing it as well. And yeah, the whole point was, I did all this work. It's a shame that nobody can hear it. Which also makes me wonder about other readings that I've done. I wonder if we've done a full cast performance of a story on the Dunesteif that I wrote, if people would be interested in hearing my solo read. Like, for example, I keep kicking around the idea of putting the sequel to The Calling out there. And if I do that, I wonder if people would want me to run the Rish Outfield director's cut, or whatever you call it, the solo read of the first story, the one that's out there on Audible, or I think it's in my very first audio collection. It seems like there might be people that want to hear that, because it's just different than a full cast performance. And a second example is, if you go to Audible right now, I finally put out my reading of the story that Big Anklevich and I ran on the Dunesteif called Last Contact. And again, it's not that the production, I think it was Clay Duggar that produced the one for the Dunesteif. It's not that the production on the Dunesteif was not good. It was just that I couldn't make any money from it. And I have so many stories, and the more that I put out there, you know, the better off I'll be. Even if I make 40 cents a story, if I have 50 stories out there, that's way better than having 10. Anyway, so I did sit down and I recorded Last Contact, and it's not significantly different than the version on the Dunesteif, but it is all me. It's much more my vision of that story than what ran on the Dunesteif. Plus, I found that there were all sorts of little problems in the manuscript. Like the character of Tiffany Other, in the very, very first draft that Big and I were kicking back and forth through email, her name was The Alien. Big ultimately named her Tiffany after the 80s pop star. But I discovered that there were multiple uses of the Tiffany in the manuscript. This manuscript that has been available for years, because we just found and replaced all the uses of alien with a capital A and changed it to Tiffany. So you know, things like that. They're definite improvements in my version versus what was out there. And then, you know, I can't help but add little things here and there and expand, and here's a new line of dialogue, etc. That reading is out there if somebody really liked that story and wanted to hear another performance of it. I feel in some ways that the Doonstief one was a little shorter, a little more edited down than what I wanted. And that's fine. When we would bring in an independent producer on the Doonstief, they got to run the show the way that they wanted to do it. That was part of the freedom that they had. And I do remember there being one that somebody produced, and we had to give him a few notes because it wasn't exactly what we wanted. But for the most part, like, Brian Lincoln was free to, like, drop all the he saids and the she saids from a story, even though that I couldn't even concentrate on the story. I was just like, what? How? Is that these two characters sound so similar. How is anybody supposed to know who they are? Or, you know, somebody could go as far as they wanted with the sound effects. Somebody could choose to do music or choose not to do music if they wanted to. Like I said, they had freedom to do it as they wanted to do it. And in Last Contact, there were a couple of edits that I always wondered, why did they cut that out? And sometimes you just can't help yourself. You don't have a good line, or there's, you know, the audio duck cuts out, or, you know, somebody didn't record this particular line, and so you have to cut the line before it and that line for the story to make sense, et cetera, et cetera. But you've got my reading over there on Audible if you want it, and I would recommend that you check it out if you liked Last Contact. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think there's room in the world for Rish Outfield's solo read and a full cast reading of Soul Cleaver Clarence. And that makes me wonder about other performances that I have done. Like I said, if we ran a story on the Doonstief and I have my version of it out there, like The Calling, would people want to hear those? And I don't think I've ever done that yet. Taken a story that ran on the Doonstief, or even a story that ran on another podcast that wasn't mine and ran my version on it. I don't think that I've done that. But a lot of those stories I do have readings of because I'll put them in like my audio collections. And so I wonder, if it means more episodes of my show, do you want to hear stories that maybe you've already heard? Would you want to hear The Calling on the Rish Outcast? Because honestly, I have more things to say about The Calling. And it seems like it could actually drum up interest in the sequel to The Calling if and when I ever put that out.
We need a medical dictionary, Jerry. When a patient gets difficult, you have to quone him.
So, I don't know how young a guy Matthew Jarvis is, but Soul Cleaver Clarence was his first professional sale. And that's great. I don't know, is this telling tales out of school or not? So recently over at the Doonstief, we did a That Gets My Goat episode where I talked about Orson Scott Card. And Card wrote Ender's Game. And because he wrote Ender's Game, you can say terrible, terrible things about him as a person. And even if they're true, he still wrote Ender's Game. And so it's just like, I can't hate him. But years ago, Big Anklevich met Orson Scott Card, and Big had decided that, you know, he might want to become a writer. I think this was his senior year of college. He and I had started hanging out, and I wanted to be a writer. And Card had written this book called How to Write Science Fiction and Fantasy. And I heartily recommend the book. I think it's great. It was all about, you know, how to make your world idiosyncratic and how to make rules for your magic. don't fill your book with unpronounceable named characters because the reader won't be able to keep all those names in his head. All sorts of really good advice. I found the book to be useful, and Big liked the book enough that he took it and had Card sign it. Card's like, "Are you a writer?" And Big said, "Well, I'm an aspiring writer." And Card said, "Well, do you write?" And Big, being Big, said, "Well, sometimes." And Card said, "Well, then, if you write, then you're a writer. You're not an aspiring writer." He talked to Big about, like, the things that he'd written and, "Have you published anything?" And Big's like, "No, I'm not there yet." And he's like, "Well, get there. Send your stuff out and you'll get better. Sometimes you'll get notes on how to make things better. Sometimes it'll just be rejections. But if you keep at it, you'll get better and eventually you'll get published. And you won't have to think of yourself as an aspiring writer. You'll be a published writer." Anyway, that's good advice. It's advice that I wish that I had heard. And I'm sure Big told me, however many years ago it was. 20 years ago, something like that. But, you know, let's say that I met Card, you know, a few days ago and had him sign that same book. And he asked me, you know, he's like, "Are you a writer?" I would definitely say yes. I wouldn't say I'm an aspiring writer. And then he says, "Are you published?" And I'd tell him, I've sold my stories to some podcasts. I got a story in Weird Tales. But, you know, his advice that he gave Big of sending your stuff out there, putting it out there, sending it and getting notes and rejections, accruing those kind of things, that's probably advice that I still should be heeding. I'm trying to think of the last time that I sent a story to a publication was Weird Tales. The year after they bought my story, I sent them another one. And they said, "Yeah, this one didn't grab us." And then I never sent him another. And that is not healthy. That's not right. I haven't submitted a story to a magazine since Weird Tales gave me that rejection. But I did send a story to a contest just this week. So if you want to hear all the boring, I think hilarious details of that, you got to support me on Patreon, because they got that story and you didn't. Regardless, I need to do better getting my stuff out there. I admire Matthew Jarvis because he sold this story to Cast of Wonders, and then I ran it the same year. So if it's his first sale, you know, he got double dividends on that. And then I'm assuming that he's young, and this is just the beginning, and he will write more and get more feedback and fans following. Oh, wow. To get fans, to get more fans, to have people say they like what you do. Wow. And that they want to hear more of it. Wow. And that they want to give you a spanking. Well, yeah, yes, wow on that too. It hasn't happened to me, but happens to me all the time. And I'm 87 years old. Yeah, there you are. Anyway, thank you, Matthew, for letting me run this on the show. I hope that the episode was interesting. And like I said, I hope that you found my reading compelling, that you're glad that you listened to it. I have considered on multiple occasions doing some kind of submissions thing on my show, letting people send stories. I mean, right now it's just, you know, if you've got a dead and breakfast story, look, it's going to have a home here on the Rish Outcast. But I've thought about doing a broken mirror story contest on my show, and it's good to do my own work, to run my own things here. But maybe that gets old. I have no doubt that a lot of my stories tend to be samey. I personally don't think they are, but because they come from me, they have bits of me inside them, they're always going to feel closer to one another than when I narrate somebody else's story. So there's that. It's neat that I got to switch it up. It's neat that you listened to it. And if you dug it, well, there, that's also neat. Thank you for listening. I have nothing more to say. I wanted to talk a little bit about how he turned the tropes on their ear, but I'm not going to. Thank you. I have been Rish Outfield.
The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at incompetech.com.
Soul Cleaver, what are you doing listening to the Rish Outcast? Don't you know it's produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives 3.0 license? That means you can share the file, download the file, listen to the file, copy the file, free of charge. But you can't sell it. You can't alter it. You can't make claims on it. Remember.
Good night. I've taken a wrong turn, and I've gone more than a mile in the wrong direction. And I don't know why. I guess it's stubbornness. But I'm continuing to go in the wrong direction, probably because I'm focused on podcasting instead of driving. One of these times, I'm going to get in an accident because I'm podcasting. And you guys will, unless it's a fatal accident, be able to hear that. Which is exciting. I like that ultimately the parents and the kids come together in this story. It's something that I just... It's positive. It's like the mother finds out what is up with her daughter, and she is okay with that. They want what's best for their kids. And I know that that's what parents do. That's what parents are. But it's just neat that there is that, I don't want to say a twist, but it is kind of a twist in the story. So there we go. Something to think about in my own writing.